Welcome to this week's edition of Everything Fast Pitch, sponsored by Fast Pitch Prep. Coach Don and I are here in the Cherokee Batting Range podcast studio, getting ready to do episode number 151. Got a really good show lined up for you today. In our warm-up segment, we're going to talk about our city of the week. We're going to talk about the need for more nominations for our player of the week. Equipment tip of the week. Did you know we've got an interesting topic there? Another great listener question, and Paige's power play. In our leadoff topic, we're going to talk about your coaching staff and how to use them more effectively. In our cleanup topic, we're going to talk about players who have made the decision that they're ready to play in college, that have signed, committed, or are going to be going to away to a college program, and them getting ready and some of the things that they say they want to do and some of the things that they really do, and trying to tie that whole thing together. And then our coaching tip of the week, Don, today we're going to talk about quality outfield practices and making sure that we're getting some stuff done for those kids. So before we do that, let's talk about our sponsors. I'm going to talk about Cleat It Up FP. Cleat It Up is the communication tool. It's a free app for your phone that will solve all your communication challenges. So check out cleatitup.com. Also want you to check out patreon.com/everythingfastpitch. Coach Don and I have been lucky enough now to build a pretty good group of patrons. We have some people that are supporting us. But patreon.com is your chance to become a patron and help support Everything Fast Pitch. There's three different levels of support, and then there's different rewards, different things that you get for being a patron. In addition to the stuff that you're going to find on the Patreon page, on February 21st, so coming up very quickly, we're going to do our first ever Zoom Coaches Clinic, which is free for any of our patrons. And we're also offering a 40% discount on our Square Cuts training discs for our patrons. Hopefully a strong incentive that will get more people interested in becoming a patron and helping us support Everything Fast Pitch. Coach Don and I have been doing this now for almost 3 years. The support that we're getting from our patrons is really keeping Everything Fast Pitch moving. It's keeping us going, and we certainly do appreciate that support. If you're interested, go to patreon.com/everythingfastpitch and become a patron. Don, let's talk about our warm-up topic. And our warm-up topic, we're going to talk about our sponsor, which is Nexair. Nexair is a Memphis-based industrial gas, medical gas, research gas, welding supply, and safety PPE supplier. With strategically placed retail locations, sales branches, and distribution centers throughout the Southeast, Nexair is never too far away. They maintain centralized product warehouses to serve you better and be more reliable. Through our services, you can receive the products you need when you need them. Our fleet of trucks will get you the gas you need when you need it. If you're interested in any Nexair product or service, or just want to talk through your options, please get in touch. Our customer care team at 888-639-2474 will help you find the branch or outside sales rep in your area. Please reach out to Nexair. They'll take care of all your needs. So the city of the week, Don, this week is Huff, Ohio.
Huff, Ohio.
Yep. And it's a mouthful.
Tongue twister.
Yeah. Yep. Another area where softball's really big. Obviously, the state of Ohio, we have a lot of really high-quality softball being played, travel ball, and school ball. Certainly, we're excited when a community is supporting Everything Fast Pitch, when the numbers are strong. And so we want to say we appreciate the people in Huff and going to ask all our listeners to share the idea of Everything Fast Pitch with your friends, your teammates, your coaches, people that you know are Fast Pitch fans. See if we can't continue to grow the numbers. If everybody who listens gets one or two people to listen, obviously our numbers go up exponentially, and we would certainly love to see some more growth. Last week, we threw out the challenge for our Florida fans to get more people listening. We've seen a couple of moves in the right direction, but for a softball hotbed that the state of Florida is, we would certainly like to see those numbers jumping up again. So Florida folks, help us out. Get your friends to listen to Everything Fast Pitch.
Tori, there's a little bit of something for everybody.
So if you're interested in this game, whether it's coaching, recruiting, a little bit of news, if you're a player that wants to know some things about how to get recruited or how to improve your game. So there's a lot of information in what we're doing with Everything Fast Pitch, and hopefully our listeners can continue to spread the word and get more people on board. So Don, our equipment tip of the week, the Square Cuts training disc, it is available. They are moving out very nicely. Very excited about the progress that we've made. The cost of the Square Cuts training disc is $49.95 a dozen. And for anybody who's interested, our YouTube channel, if you go to our website, fastpitchprep.com, you can order on the website, but there's also a link to our YouTube channel. And the YouTube channel has about 6 or 7 drills, videos that you can look at that are going to show you ways that you can use the Square Cuts training disc for hitting, One of the things that we've been very excited to hear back from our listeners and people that are purchasing them is that they're finding all kinds of other things besides hitting
Absolutely.
That they can use them for. So have people telling us that they're using them for fielding, for simulating bad hops and things like that. Other people are using them for pitching to work on spins. Other people are using them for throwing to work on making sure that the throwing motion is correct and that the disc is flying correctly. And obviously that would translate to the ball. So we created it as a hitting tool. But what we're finding out is that softball people are creative. And if you come up with a tool that's got some flexibility to it, that they're going to figure out ways to use it. So the Square Cuts training discs, again, go to our website, fastpitchprep.com. You can click on the link, order them up. We'll get them shipped to you right away. And if you have the opportunity, if you come up with any other ideas, things that you're using them for besides hitting, let us know. Coach Don and I are very excited to see that so many of you are being creative and using our tool in so many different ways.
So now, Tori, too, if they are listening to this now, that they would actually receive a discount if they
Absolutely.
Ordered online,
yeah.
right?
So for all our podcast listeners, we have a 10% discount, and it is ILISTEN21 is the promo code. So ILISTEN21 is your promo code, and that'll get you a 10% discount. So again, go to the website, fastpitchprep.com. Get them ordered up, and we'll get them sent out to you right away. So, Don, did you know we've been talking about records?
Right.
So we've been talking about the Division I record book and things that are unlikely to ever be challenged, records that probably are going to stand forever. Well, I decided to venture into the Division II world, partly because, you know, for those of you that are not aware of it, when Coach Don and I met, when we were younger coaches just getting started in this, we were coaching at the Division II level.
We spent a little time there.
Then, Kennesaw State was a Division II school. Well, really an NAIA school that had just become a Division II school.
Right.
And I was coaching at University of Wisconsin-Parkside, which was a Division II school. Again, similar situation, had been an NAIA power and had moved into Division II. And so that's where Coach Don and I met. And so just to give Coach Don a little walk down memory lane, a little
cool.
reminder, one of the Division II records that I believe is never going to be challenged, never going to be threatened, is a player named Jackie Aiken, who played for me at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. Jackie played from 1994 to 1997. Her career, she played 264 games. But here's the number we're going to talk about today, 344 RBIs.
Wow. That's fantastic.
That's a big number.
No, she hit the ball hard. She hit the ball well, and she was always, you know, frightening. I mean, it was like, uh-oh, what's she going to do this time?
Well, one of the things with Jackie, and we'll talk about her again some more as we work on our Division II records that are never going to be broken. Her freshman year, when I was coaching at Parkside, we played a lot of games then on the 300-foot slow pitch fields. This is in the early days before everybody was building their
fast
pitch specific, stadium type, fields. Even our home field her freshman year was a city park that was just wide open country. You could, to hit a over the fence home run, you had to hit it about a quarter of a mile because that's where the park entrance was. Anything in between the park entrance and home plate, it would hit the ground and roll for a while. Well, Jackie's challenge her freshman year was she would hit the ball 275 feet, but the outfielders would be standing 250 feet from home plate, so they would catch some of them.
Right.
But, and even more so what happened is that balls would still get hit over their heads, but they were able to get it in before she could get an inside the park
Around
home run.
Around the field, right.
So Jackie's freshman year, she led the nation in triples.
Knowing Jackie was kind of odd, right?
Yeah. And Jackie was a really talented player, really all around.
I can't remember. She wasn't super fast, though,
but she wasn't the fastest player ever.
Right.
The triples that she led the nation in were all balls that on any other year of her career or in a lot of other situations would have all been home runs. Coach Don and I always laugh that the first game we played against each other as coaches, Jackie hit a ball about 290 feet that the center fielder, Shannon McDonough from Kennesaw State, caught.
Right.
And when it got hit, I had not seen very many people hit a softball that far in my entire lifetime. And to see that end up as an out, where nowadays would have been so far out of the park that people would have, the outfielders wouldn't even have chased after it. They would have just dropped their heads and waited to hear it bouncing off the roof or whatever.
Thinking back to that one, Tori, it was almost like the movies. You just saw the outfielder turn and start running.
Yep.
Then it's like, well, maybe. And then finally she does catch it and has to come back out of the clouds or the fog.
Yeah, but it was amazing thing to coach Jackie. She was a great hitter. And a few years ago, I did a blog for the website that talked about my all-time team of the players that I've coached. And Jackie is, without a doubt, and I mean this sincerely, she's the best hitter I've ever seen.
She was very good.
I mean, not just the best hitter I've ever coached. She's the best hitter I've ever seen. And I will say that in full recognition of Crystal Bustos and Stacey Neuveman and all these amazing, amazing, you know, big-time legends. I think if you put those players in a room with Jackie Aiken, all of them in their prime, and you say, okay, we're going to take 10 swings in BP, we're going to take 20 swings in BP, we're going to, you know, all stack up and play against each other in a scrimmage game or whatever, I think she holds her own with all of those legends. So
I love it.
So our Division II, our first Division II record, Jackie Aiken, UW-Parkside, 344 career RBIs. So Don, our listener question comes to us from Coach Alexis. And Alexis's question is, my daughter is 13, she pitches for our team, and she wants to get in better shape. What are some suggestions that you would have for her as a pitcher and her conditioning?
Well, you know, and you know, a lot of times with the conditioning piece, people say that we're, you know, we're not a track team, we're not all those types of things that involve running, because all we do are very short sprints, right, for our game. But I think that the conditioning piece for a pitcher
is a little different.
Yeah, when their legs are gone underneath them, and they're exhausted or they're tired or they're not in that you know, physical condition that they can keep on going, that's when they start getting beat up and tough in the circle. So I think personally that a lot of cardio things are very helpful and beneficial for pitchers. You know, whether it's you know, jogging or cycling or whatever it might be to kind of push the limits a little bit with their cardio, I think is super helpful. I mean, obviously arm conditioning and things like that are important, and rest and just being conscious of you know, how much we're working with our arm. The legs are important, Tori.
Right. Well, I think because the question isn't really talking about increasing speed or throwing harder, that, you know, that Alexis is really curious about that cardio aspect of it, the conditioning piece of it. And this is the one place in our game where I agree down 100% that distance running, treadmill, stair stepper, any of those things that you do, swimming, anything that you do that's going to increase your cardio and your durability and your endurance.
Is
definitely going to help for pitchers. You know, so much of power pitching comes from the legs and the core, that working on those parts of your body certainly makes sense. And I think the stronger the legs, the stronger the core, the more likely a pitcher is to be able to be sharp for the entire tournament, not just the first couple of innings.
Being durable.
You know, to be strong in the seventh inning, not just in the first inning. A good logical program that's going to include, you know, a lot of different types of training, but are going to get the heart rate up and keep the heart rate up, I think is a really good investment for pitchers. And I think you can still do some speed and agility, and obviously you're still going to be doing your pitching. But I think that getting the legs in shape, getting the core in shape is a really good idea. And Alexis, we appreciate you asking that question. And certainly, you know, there are lots of different programs out there. There's lots of different things that you can do. You know, I tell this story all the time. When I was coaching at Tennessee Tech, there was a new gym had opened up in town. And one of the women who was working there as a fitness instructor was a former softball player. And so she came to see me one day and wanted to know if we were interested in getting our team involved in an aerobics type, Taibo kind of PX90 kind of program.
Yeah.
And I was really excited by it because, you know, I thought it really made sense. And so we went into the facility for the first workout, and the kids were, you know, working really, really hard. They were really getting after it, and the sweat was pouring off of them. You know, the t-shirts were already soaked through with sweat. And after about 25, 30 minutes, the instructor stops and says, all right, now that we're warmed up, let's get started.
And the look on their faces.
Yeah, let's just say the things they were saying about Coach Torrey that day were were colorful and not too complimentary. What ended up happening that year was by far the most well-conditioned, best endurance team we ever had. You know, I think sometimes you get out what you put in, and if we want our kids to be strong at the end of the games. And now that program I really liked because while there was a lot of cardio in it, there was also a lot of explosiveness and a lot of punching type movements and striking type movements, which I thought really tied in well with softball skills. But those kids were in the best shape they'd ever been in.
Well, Tori, I think also the piece that I'm excited about with these situations is when you get put in a position as an athlete that you think that you're about to have to stop, or you feel like you're exhausted, or you might not make it through whatever that challenge is that day. you know, as a group, if we get used to winning that battle and winning that challenge and succeeding, I think that becomes a habit. And we just have a habit of making it. We have a habit of doing it and pulling together and leaning on each other when we don't think we can make it. And when we constantly do, that becomes a habit. So right. I think that's good, and it pours over into our game too.
Yeah, the confidence that you gain in overcoming those days that you want to stop and mm-hmm. that you want to quit are pretty powerful. So, So Alexis, hopefully that gives you some stuff to think about for your daughter. Your Everything Fast Pitch t-shirt is in the mail. We really do appreciate you reaching out to us with that listener question. For any of our listeners, if you do have questions or suggestions or comments, or definitely Player of the Week nominations, please make sure that you reach out to us at fastpitchprep@gmail.com or everythingfastpitch@gmail.com. One of the things that we certainly are excited about is when we have a lot of feedback and interaction with our listeners, because then it allows Coach Don and I a chance to really concentrate on stuff that you're really interested in. And I forgot to mention it earlier, but it just reminded me, let's make sure that we get some Player of the Week nominations in. This week we are lacking a Player of the Week, and it's a little bit disappointing whenever we have a week when we don't get a nomination, because I know there's a lot of kids out there that really do deserve some recognition.
Even if it's not softball stuff, right?
You know, just if exceptional you've got a thing. Straight A student or doing something special in the community. So again, if you have nominations for Player of the Week or questions or suggestions, please reach out to us again at those emails, everythingfastpitch@gmail.com or fastpitchprep@gmail.com. So Don, that's going to take us into this week's edition of Paige's Power Play.
Hey, you guys. All right. I want to talk about letting go of expectations. So difficult to do sometimes, right? I know this for a fact because I am the queen of expectations. I have had high expectations for myself, like probably from when I was like in second grade or first grade, I don't know. Early on, I always had these high expectations of myself for school, being an athlete, for softball, for volleyball. Even now, like as a business owner, I even have expectations for everybody else, my brothers, my family. I'm like, this is the expectation. If we're not meeting it, then we're failing. And that's been the mindset I've had for a really long time, but it's expectations is something that I've worked on for a while now, and I've gotten a lot better at it. I'm definitely not perfect at letting go of expectations, but I found when we let go of expectations, it just frees ourselves to do the things that we want, and success ends up falling right into our lap. So just to share a little story about expectations, in college, I expected myself to excel. I expected myself to be a starting player. I expected myself to be an amazing hitter, a great catcher, the best catcher. And when my hitting did not exceed my expectations for a whole 3 years, so my freshman, sophomore, and junior year of college, I was well below my expectations of hitting. I was actually hitting like 130 or something like that, which is pretty rough if you know baseball and softball statistics. Anyway, so I was falling short of my expectations. I was frustrated. I was angry with myself. I was sad. I cried a ton, and it was just awful. I was just like in this cycle of awfulness. And it wasn't until my senior year when I finally was able to let go of expectations. And the way that I did this was I had these new commitments for myself. One, I was just gonna give it my all, and I was gonna have a lot of fun. A lot of fun was the difference there. I was giving it my all this time. That was no different, but I was committing to have fun because this was my last year. This was my last chance to play, my last memories out on the field, my last time getting to be an athlete in a competitive environment. So I was gonna give it my all and have a lot of fun. And then B, I just told myself, whatever happens, happens. No matter what the results are, no matter what the outcomes are, those expectations, I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like, whatever happens, happens. And that might sound a little crazy to you guys, like, oh, like she doesn't really care. Trust me, I cared. I cared a lot. Like I was telling you, those expectations have always been incredibly high for myself. I don't think it's about, it's not like you're not going to like, you don't, it's hard. It's very hard to articulate because as athletes, we should have expectations of ourselves and we should want more. And that is totally fine. But I want you to just think of it in a different way. Okay. So let's think of another example here. I would go up to my at-bats, especially in a pressure situation where runners are in scoring position. It's my job to get a hit and score my teammates so that we can score runs and win the game. Okay. I would go up there being like, oh my gosh, I need to get a hit. I have to get a hit or else I'm going to get pulled or else we're not going to score or I'm a failure. I'm not going to meet those expectations. Those were the thoughts I was having. Instead of the thing that shifted for me my senior year and the way that I think about pressure situations and things that we have to do or we need to do is I'm changing it to I get to go get that hit. I have an opportunity to go do this. Like, how cool, how exciting is that, that I get to be the person to do that? And I have put so much work in. Like, I can do this. I was meant for this. I was made for this. And it's just that simple shift in thinking about that expectation, right? The expectation is to get a hit, right? Instead of I need to, I have to, it's I get to. How cool is that? And then go out there and crush it. It's more of this excited, this opportunity, this gratitude, like grateful for the opportunity kind of thinking rather than I need to and I have to. Okay. Getting to play sports and be an athlete is a privilege, right? It's something that like we're given and like we get to do that. So I want you to start thinking about it a little bit differently. I also want to mention that we are all different. And we got to figure out what makes us tick. Maybe those expectations, maybe those things are really good for you. And when you're like, oh, like if you don't get a hit, like you're not eating tonight. I don't know. Then if that works for you, keep doing that. That didn't work for me. And I had to think about it in a different way. And I had to start telling myself different things like, oh, like, I don't even care who's out there on the mound. I'm getting a hit no matter what. I can touch anything that girl throws me, right? Or I get to go do this. How freaking cool is that? Like, we're all different and we got to figure out what makes you tick. And I'm challenging you to think about like, what do you have to lose? If you're already feeling stuck or if you're already in a slump or you just feel like you're in this rut and can't get out, what do you have to lose it by having a different mindset about these expectations? What do you have to lose if you, for a weekend, tried to let go of those expectations and said, okay, I'm gonna just give it my all, I'm gonna have fun, whatever happens, happens. Like, what if you tried that out? I mean, it's not gonna, you do horribly that weekend, it's not like anything really changed, right? So try, and I'm challenging to just try to think about some things differently, shifting your perspective. Okay. So that's my challenge to you. I can't wait to hear about it. Oh, I'm like super fired up. And side note, I still have the photo entry going on. So the athlete photo entry. So if you haven't submitted a photo, I am sharing your guys' photos and stories to inspire other girls and athletes. And it's just, it's so cool to see all these photos of you guys in different situations, whether it's feeling that success or celebrating with your teammates or in like that focus, visualization, taking that deep breath mode, any of those. Like, if you have a really cool photo, submit it in the photo entry so that you can possibly be shared on my social media so that you can inspire others. Like, how cool is that, right? Have an amazing rest of your week and I will see you all soon.
And I really enjoy listening to Paige's piece every week. She has something good to say, something positive to say that I think really should be impactful for players and parents that are listening. If you have the opportunity, if you're in a position where you can, check out Paige's stuff at paigetonz.com, T-O-N-Z. I strongly recommend for parents and players signing up, getting involved in her programs. The confident athlete thing that she's doing is really, really powerful. And one of the things that I think Coach Don and I can both attest to is we see an awful lot of kids who have so many issues with confidence and believing in themselves and faith in their own ability to accomplish things, that having somebody who's been there, done that, that is, you know, young enough and relatable enough for these players to work with, I think is a really powerful thing. So make sure you check out PaigeTons.com and get your kids signed up.
I was going to say, she's just touching on things, and there's so much more that right. she shares,
well, and her program is so much more in-depth. Yeah. You know, she talks about little suggestions or little ideas. Well, when you sign up for the program, you get the, from A to Z nuts and bolts, how to really do it, how to really, put it to work for you. And again, like I said, I just know a couple of kids that have gone through her program, and it's transformed their confidence. They are totally different players after going through it than they were before. So check it out, and please make sure you follow up with Paige and her program. So Don, our leadoff topic this week is sponsored by Elite Sporting Goods. Elite Sporting Goods is located at 905 Grayson Highway in Lawrenceville, Georgia. Phone number there is 678-377-0270. You can also contact them at elitesportsorders@yahoo.com. Anything you need, bats, balls, equipment, spirit wear, uniforms, reach out to the folks at Elite. I know they are shipping stuff all over the country. If you need it, they can get it for you. So Don, the topic today is, for head coaches specifically, but for all of us that are in the coaching world, thinking about how our coaching staff should be working together, ways that we can make the most use of our coaches to make sure that the help that we have and the people that are working with us are contributing what they can to help the team be as successful as possible.
No, I think that's a great topic, Tori. And again, a lot of groups are kind of just getting started, getting outside, and some are new groups that are just being formed. And I think this topic is great because we definitely want to utilize all of our resources. And a lot of times we've got parents that have different backgrounds. They may have been in some type of speed and agility program, or they may have access to somebody that that is a professional in that. Other times, they might have been someone that played sports in college or did some things as well. And to know what all of our parents' backgrounds are athletically, I think, can be very helpful in creating an easier environment for you as a head coach to facilitate all the needs the very best we can. So I think we need to be aware of what everybody might be able to do to contribute.
Right. Well, one of the things I think for those of us that are coaching, number one is you don't have to be some super genius expert to impact these kids' lives and be able to be a successful coach. I think that there's a lot of misconception that if I haven't played, if I haven't got the experience, if I didn't play at a really high level, if I wasn't a college player or a college athlete, that somehow I'm not qualified.
Able to.
And, the reality of it is that there's a lot of great coaches that were not great players. And there's a lot of people that are really successful coaches that didn't, play hardly at all. And obviously for a lot of us male coaches in fast pitch, certainly didn't play fast pitch softball.
Right.
Now, we see a lot of the former men's players now are also very successful coaches at the college level. So there's there's some benefit in having some experience, but it's not something that should
at
preclude
that level.
You.
Yeah.
And not something that should preclude you from wanting to get involved. But so I think from a head coach's perspective, there's a couple of things that we need to think about. And I think it always starts off with a little bit of reflection, a little bit of looking at our personalities. For some of us as coaches, there's the type of coach who feels like they have to have their hand in everything. It's like everything that happens at practice, they have to see it. They have to be involved with it. They have to, have input on it. So they feel like they're the expert in the room on everything, and that they need to be the person that's making all the corrections. So whether it's an infield issue, an outfield issue, a pitching issue, a hitting issue, there's those head coaches that feel like they're the head coach, and that means that they're supposed to be in charge of absolutely everything that happens. And then the other version is the coaches who are really good at understanding that they can't be in all places at all times, they can't do all things equally well, that are better at designating different roles and giving different jobs to different people within their coaching staffs. And the one thing that I'm starting to see more and more of, and it's not necessarily just in the softball world, but across all sports, is that the most successful head coaches seem to be more and more now the delegators, the managers of the entire coaching staff versus the coaches who think they have to be involved in everything.
No, I think that's great, Tori. And as you're saying that, I'm thinking back to times when I watched groups that were highly successful. I've seen it kind of both ways, just like you're describing, but it seems like the comfort level and the enjoyment for the head coach is a lot better when they do share the responsibility.
Yep.
And let those around them do what they can to help and roll smoothly, and it seems to be very successful as well.
Right. One, I think what's challenging about doing this soul searching is that both models can work really well. I've seen coaches that are that type A personality that are involved in absolutely everything that happens with their team and mm-hmm. be very successful and win a lot. And I've seen some really successful coaches and programs that are really good at delegating responsibilities and sharing the workload. But I think more and more now that the model of sharing the responsibility of including your assistant coaches, helping everybody else play a role in the success of the program seems to be the direction that more things are going.
Yeah, I think in the beginning when you brought this topic up, I was putting myself here at the batting cage and listening to some of the travel teams here. And, you know, they'll be hitting and conditioning and doing pitching and fielding and doing all their routine. And then all of a sudden the coach will be talking to one of the parents and they're like, and you do speed and agility at the high school? And that parent will be like, yeah, you know, I'm in charge of doing. They're like, well, I wish I would have known because I would have, you know, incorporated that into our workout. Another funny one was a young one had a friend of ours that coached at Kennesaw. He was watching practice and he kind of just wanted to sit back and watch. And then finally, halfway through the season, they found out that he coaches at Kennesaw. And then they're like, well, I wish we would have known because we would have had you doing all this stuff. And yeah. So maybe they wanted to sit back and watch and maybe, maybe they could have been utilized differently. But
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think you're hitting on a couple of important points, Don. So for our head coaches, number one is make sure that you got your eyes open and you're asking questions because there might be people within your circle that you could really take advantage of and incorporate into what you're doing with your team. And the second thing is to make sure that when you do have people around you that are knowledgeable, that are capable, that are enthusiastic, that really want to help, that you're including them and sure. giving them roles. Now, I think roles are important. I think we need to designate different delineations in how things happen. I think one of the things that with all teams, we have to have the line in the sand where the head coach is the ultimate decision maker. And, there's a line in the great movie Remember the Titans when Herman Boone and Yost are talking about
their
roles.
You're so good with these names.
and Herman Boone says, I've never seen an assistant coach's name in the paper for losing a game.
Right.
And so I think, we want to have some lines, some clear definition of roles. But I think we have to understand that at some point in time, there's going to be decisions where it doesn't get to be a democracy. It doesn't get to be a vote.
There has to be a decision made.
The head coach is going to be making those decisions.
Yeah.
But I think the head coaches who incorporate a much more of a cooperative model that are using their assistant coaches well are going to obviously be more successful. So when we define those roles and define those duties, I think it's important. And I've always been a fan of, somebody works with the outfield, somebody works with the infield, somebody works with the catcher, somebody does speed and agility, somebody does different things that they can really focus on. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't do some crossover, that you can't have, Don does infield one day and I do outfield and then we switch periodically. But I think the idea of duties is really good because that gives those people an opportunity to really dig in and learn more to, specialize in something. And to probably invest time and effort into learning new drills, new ideas, new techniques. And so I think the idea of duties and roles for people within your staff is really important. And then I think it's designing practices that allow those people the opportunity to do those things in practice. And I think as a team gets a little bit more organized, as it develops a little bit more, it becomes easier and more readily defined. I think that sometimes that first couple of practices, few times that a team gets together, you might be feeling your way out a little bit, trying to kind of get the feet on the ground. But once that happens, let's make sure that everybody's got a job to do, and we give them the power to do it. Something that we've talked about in the past, as a head coach, I think that it's important that you support your assistant coaches. That doesn't mean that you're going to agree with everything they say or everything that they do, but if you
The confidence.
And if you attack what one of your assistant coaches is doing in front of the team, you've just destroyed that coach's credibility within the team. And so if you and I were coaching together and I was the head coach and I saw you teaching the outfielders to start off standing on their head.
Sure.
That's the ready position. The Don McKinley ready position is a handstand in center field. And then when the ball gets hit, you jump down and you start running. I probably would think that's a shaky starting position, but I'd let you finish the drill and let you finish practice that way, and then we would talk about it afterwards.
Before you fired me.
Before I fire you, before I freak out in front of the team, because it could be something as weird as, you're trying to disorient them a little bit at the beginning of the drill to see how they react. You're trying to confuse them a little bit to put some pressure on them. You're trying to do, something that, amps up the intensity or the focus that I'm not aware of, that I'm not sure.
Changing the direction of the blood flow.
Right. Yeah. Whatever it might be, right. that there really is some logic behind what you're doing. Now, I still might not necessarily agree with it. I might have an idea of a different way to do it, but that doesn't mean that it deserves ridicule in front of the team. And I think that's one of the things that sometimes is hard for head coaches is, again, and I think it's especially for the head coach that started off being that my hands are involved in everything. So now they venture off the reservation. They decide, okay, I'm going to give my assistant coaches some leeway. And then the very first time one of their assistant coaches does something they don't like, they have to rein them right back in and say, oh, no, that's not the way we're going to do it.
So I thought you were just going to blow the whistle and then say, hey, we got to start new drills, right?
Right.
Because Coach Don's doing something a little crazy out there.
Time's up. Let's move on to hitting. But
here's what I like, too, about that, Tori, is that if you are delegating areas of the game to different people, then I'm excited about going and trying to find those drills and researching and doing things. If you told me that I had to find the drills for all aspects of it, that would be probably a very daunting and challenging task. So if it's just one area, I'm excited to go and try and find some new drills for practice this week or this month and not be so overwhelming.
Right. When I think it's anything that brings some freshness to what you're doing, anything that brings some excitement to what you're doing is always going to have value. And I think that's one of the things that is sometimes lost in the discussion is that we get so wrapped up in, the routine of practice that we don't venture outside our comfort zone enough. And so having your assistant coaches interested and enthusiastic and looking for new things, I would love to have somebody come with something new to every single practice that is exciting and fresh and brings some spunk. I think there's always going to be a place for the routine in practice where there's things that you have to do.
Consistent.
But there's lots of ways to do those things. And there's lots of ways to market those things to your players to keep it fresh and exciting. And honestly, for me, that's one of the things that I really regret now looking back, because I think I get caught, thinking that certain things have to be done a certain way sometimes.
Because it worked.
Yeah, but I'm
If we didn't win with those things,
right,
then we might have changed them sooner.
Yeah, the winning part can confuse you, but I think one of the things that we want to focus on is making sure that we're keeping it fresh for the kids, because we're talking about Jackie Aiken in the 90s, one of the greatest players I've ever coached.
But we didn't know what we didn't know.
Right. But those players had a whole different outlook on life. I can remember when one of our players got a cell phone back then. It was like the most shocking thing, somebody actually didn't have to go back to the apartment to get on the phone to call somebody.
Check the messages.
And and now these kids, every one of them, I have a 7-year-old for lessons that's got a phone that is getting distracted by her phone at 7.
Pit stopping.
Yeah.
And so,
so to me, it's just important for us to kind of keep all that stuff in mind. And then the last part about your coaching staff is one of the things that we've talked about in the past, but I think is always worth bringing back up, is making sure that we're training our players to help each other, to kind of act as almost surrogate assistant coaches, so that if we're doing drills, that a more experienced player is willing to or able to help a less experienced player. If we're doing a hitting circuit and we're going through different stations, different drills, player who's better at hitting the outside pitch can help that player who's weaker at it. The kid who's really good at staying back and hammering the changeup is working with the kid who really stinks at hitting the changeup.
Sure.
On top of the roles that we have for our quote-unquote real assistant coaches, that we're getting all our players, all the kids on the team involved in helping each other and kind of coaching each other up. And I think if we can do those things, before you know it, practices are a lot more efficient, a lot more fun, and our teams are getting a lot better faster than they can in a lot of other ways.
Well, and that, again, too, kind of multiplies what you're able to do. You know, if others are taking some of that load off of us, then we can move on to other pieces that are right. maybe just as important.
Yeah, and overseeing what's happening, I think, is always going to be part of that head coach role. But overseeing or having your hands in every single thing that happens, I think, are two different discussions.
It's
and so
tough.
I think for us, it's just looking at the fact that you've got people that can help. Let's make sure we take advantage of that help. Let's use it to our advantage. Do everything we can to help the kids grow as much as we possibly can. And so using your staff well, getting your players up to speed so they can help each other, having duties and roles for everybody involved, I think we're going to end up having much better practices that get a lot more done without us having to be out there for 8 or 9 hours.
I love it.
So, Don, that's going to take us to our cleanup topic. Our cleanup topic is one that hits close to home for me. And here's why I wanted us to talk about this. One of the things that's happened now for me 3 times, maybe 4 times now since I stopped coaching, is that I've been approached by teams of older players, you know, the 16, 17, 18-year-old kids that are all either signing with schools or on the verge of signing. You know, they've all been recruited. They're all on the verge of becoming college players. And the sales pitch to get me out there, the reason that people are trying to hire me to come and help with practices or whatever it is we need to get these kids ready for college. These kids need to know what college practices are going to be like. You know, obviously with me, you know, only being, you know, 5 years removed from the college game now, I think I've still got a pretty good idea of what the tempo is, what the pace is like, what college coaches are going to expect. And so I wanted us to talk about this because I've loved the fact that people have asked for that help, but I haven't been that impressed with how they've reacted to it once it's been delivered.
Yeah, no, that's kind of tricky. And again, I wasn't sure on this topic, Tori, if we were heading down that road of, you know, I've got my scholarship, I've got my, you know, next level opportunity, and now I can kind of put the coasters on. And
yeah, well, that's part of it. Yeah.
If those coaches are worried that they're not able to comfortably push them to where right. the coaches know they need to be.
Right. Well, I think that's it.
They know that that there's more out there for them.
Right.
And for you to be the one to come in and share that with them and let them know that even though they have secured that next opportunity, that it's not done. And if they're not careful, that, you know, somebody else is going to sneak by and pass them by and take their opportunity from them.
Right.
So it's time to turn it up. And I've seen both types of kids, the ones that as soon as they, you know, get that next level opportunity, they put the coasters on, they're on cruise control.
Yeah.
And then there's the others that are scared to death that they're not going to be able to maintain the level that is needed for that next journey. And they turn it up a notch. So I'm excited that the coaches are reaching out and saying, hey, you know, we need you to share with our group what's around the corner for them, because
right.
you've seen it and you know. And, you know, I urge all those kids to be the one that is trying to figure out what I can do to be better.
Right.
You know, what else can I do?
Yeah, so. Well, I think there's several layers to why this topic is important. I think number one that you touched on is that the travel ball coaches, high school coaches, really are aware of the fact that the players that they're coaching, the ones that have signed or committed or are on the verge of being college players, are not as prepared as everybody wishes they were. They're not as ready as we want them to be. And so when we talk about being ready, let's just kind of put that in perspective. What our goal is for kids as freshmen to be able to take advantage of my knowledge and my experience and walk in as freshmen who are not the typical freshmen, not the lost in the crowd,
eyes wide open,
not physically fit, not mentally tough kinds of freshmen. And that's the vast majority of kids when they walk onto a college campus. They walk in there and they are quickly overwhelmed. They're quickly intimidated. They figure out very quickly that they are not really ready for what they've gotten into. And I think there's lots of reasons why that's true. But so I think the coaches and in some cases parents around these kids know that that's likely to happen, and they're trying to prepare the kids
to avoid some of the
fallout. Because one of the things that happens quite often, and this is something that I don't have real statistics in front of me to be able to tell you exactly what happens, but my gut instinct is that about half of the kids that go away to play college softball actually play for 4 years.
Right.
And about half of them fall by the wayside, and some of them fall by the wayside very quickly because they go from a world where they get to play all the time, They've skated by just on their natural ability and their natural athletic ability for their entire career. They've been in the travel ball world where they're guaranteed playing time no matter what. And because they're talented enough, and let's just be honest, if a kid is talented enough that they were recruited, chances are that means they're one of the best players on the team they're coming from.
For sure.
And yep. So all that stuff adds up to them having it in their mind, well, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. It's worked so far. It's going to keep working. And so that's the rub. That's where this discussion really comes from. So we've got adults in their world that are trying to help them. We've got coaches that are trying to prepare them so that they can be one of the success stories when they get to college instead of one of the kids that quits at the start of their sophomore year or whatever. But part of the problem is that the college coaches during the recruiting process, they kind of thinly veil the reality. But nobody...
That's tricky.
Yeah, but very few coaches, I think, are brutally honest. One of my coaching friends the other day I was talking to, and she admitted that, you know, because they have a packet that they send to all the freshmen, that, like, after they sign, you know, somewhere, you know, heading into the
Here's
summer...
Here's what we got coming.
It's like a summer workout program. But she admitted, but she said, but they only send the kids about half of what they really need to be able to do, because she's sure that if they look at the whole workout, what they're really going to be doing when they get there, that they'll be so intimidated that most of them won't do anything.
Right.
So she's hoping that if they do half of what they need to do, at least they'll be halfway ready.
She can almost get it done. Yeah.
But I think that statement right there kind of puts into perspective how different what these kids are expecting and what they're really going to get is. That the college coaches, in a lot of cases, already know that if kids really knew how hard it was going to be,
they don't want to scare you off.
Right. You know, so they're already going to be intimidated by it. And so the kids think they're really doing a lot because they're doing the workout that the coach sent them. And then they get there and they're still not really prepared.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a lot of the kids look at that workout and go, well, that's too hard. I'm not going to do that either. And so then they're totally unprepared. The rub is, what I want us to do is to talk to parents and players specifically, and a little bit to our coaching friends. You know, college coaches, we need to do a better job. Once a kid is signed, once you know they're coming to your school, let's cut through the recruiting talk now and get down to the nuts and bolts of it. This is going to be the most competitive thing you've ever been involved in. This is going to be the most demanding thing you've ever been involved in. And the harder you work now to be ready for it, the better off you're going to be.
So being dedicated and willing to do all those things is going to be part of the success story.
Yeah, because you talked about the coaster kid, you know, the kid who thinks that they've signed and that means that they've done all they need to do.
Cruise control.
Those kids, you know, they sign their scholarship in November, February, or April, and they think that means they get to go on vacation. That means they get to go skiing. It means they get to go to the beach. That means they can quit their travel ball team and play for a local rec team or something else, you know, or just take the summer off completely so that they can rest up and be ready as for the start of their college career. And all those things are really, really, really dumb, and it's a recipe for disaster.
So here's the one thing is we'd say, don't be afraid to do too much. I would be very fearful of not doing enough.
Yep. When we're talking to our players that are going off to college and that are committing and signing, from a parent perspective, it's challenging because kids at that age don't want to believe their parents know much of anything to begin with.
Sure.
From the coaches that are asking us to come out, asking me to come out and help them run practices, to, you know, run college-type practices so their kids get more familiar with it, they've got to then stick with the program. They've got to continue on that path. Because one of the things that I think happens is I'll go out there and put together a really good, action-packed, three-hour practice where the kids are huffing and puffing and really tired at the end of it. And as soon as I leave, the coaches look at it and think, well, that was fun. The kids know what to expect. And then they go right back to the
normal
practices, which don't reinforce what they worked on.
Right.
You know, I think it's okay to set some expectations then for your kids moving forward. Say, okay, so now that we know what these practices look like, we're going to do everything we can to match that intensity every practice. We're going to try to match that same kind of schedule, that same kind of workload, so that they understand kind of what to expect. And if we can do that, if the coaches can then follow up with reinforcing it, then I think we're going to take a step in the right direction. Now, some kids still aren't going to believe that they need to worry about it because they're kids.
They're the best.
Yeah,
already.
They're kids.
Yeah.
And they're talented kids, which is a really tough thing. Parents, coaches, we need to reinforce it. We need to follow up with continuing on that path of expectation. And I know this is going to sound like crazy talk to some of our travel ball people, but pick a couple of times a year one or two tournaments and just tell everybody, okay, so starting now's the, you know, let's say 2 weeks out, we're playing a big tournament 4th of July weekend.
Right.
When we go to Colorado this year, because you're all signed, none of you need to get recruited anymore. I'm going to teach the treat this trip like a college coach would. The players who deserve to play will play. Players who don't deserve to play won't.
Right.
And for many kids, that's going to be the first time in their lives that they've ever faced that challenge of, well, what do you mean I don't get to play my, you know, half the time, two-thirds of the time, three-quarters of the time? To try to keep that momentum going, then again, okay, so our goal now is to have you ready as a freshman, right? You know, we're not going to do it every week. We're not going to do it every tournament, but pick once or twice. You know, and maybe it's, you know, the national tournament. You know, some teams are probably doing that already. When you get to the nationals, before you get there, instead of leaving kids in the dark about why decisions are being made, tell them right then and there, you know, we're going to play the 9 best players. The 9 kids who deserve to play are going to play. You know, we're going to use our pitching staff, but, you know, if you're the best shortstop, you're not coming out. You're playing as long as you're the best shortstop and you've done what you need to do to earn that spot. Use that as a way to kind of reinforce again for these kids what it is that they're getting into. Because one of the things that was the most amazing to me with the first really good team I worked with, and I worked with them, you know, on a regular basis, was a couple of the most talented kids were the kids that were least prepared for college. You know, one player who I would be willing to bet you everything I own, she is by far the most talented kid on her Division I college team. And she pinch ran like twice her freshman year and didn't play other than that.
Right.
Because she didn't know how to work hard. She wouldn't push herself. She wasn't dedicated. She wasn't doing the things that she needed to do to prove that she deserved to play. And her college coach was, you know, doing what college coaches do, which is playing the kids that deserve to play.
Right.
So a super talented, you know, all state, all world, you know, somewhere on those top 100 lists kinds of kids. Yep. Pinch ran a couple times as a freshman and didn't get on the field otherwise, you know, and a couple of other kids that were really talented kids that are not playing anymore as sophomores or juniors in college because they were not ready for the challenges that being a college player really were. And it's not meant to scare anybody. It's meant to give you some motivation to be better prepared for the challenges that you're going to face.
Just insight, right? Let you be eyes wide open,
right?
Knowing what's coming.
Because to me, the perfect world is when your freshmen come into your college program and they are really prepared to compete. And not just because they're super talented, but because they've got the work ethic, they've got the dedication, they understand the grind.
They get it.
Yeah, they understand that, you know, that being a really good softball player means you got to work at it every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those kids are the ones that when they come in as freshmen with that attitude, then we're rocking and rolling. And so we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can. And so what I've seen in my limited experience with being the quote-unquote expert that's going to help these kids get on board is that everybody thinks it's a good idea until they figure out how hard it is. Coaches think it's a really good idea until they figure out that that means they've got to follow through and run the same kinds of practices and the same kind of intensity with the same kinds of standards. And I think sometimes we think it's a good idea until we really got to get involved in doing it.
Well, and Tori, and we hear it all the time too about the top teams in college are what everyone's aspiring to. That's what they want. That's where they feel like they need to be, and to really know, you know, what it takes for those teams to be super successful is tough.
Right.
It takes exactly what you're talking about.
It takes a lot. And again, the college coaches bear some of the responsibility because I think in the recruiting process, we do a lot of, Don, you're amazing. Don, you're great. You know, Don, you got a chance to be our starting shortstop.
Every time you say that, I feel like I can settle back into my chair a little deeper, right?
And unfortunately, when a college coach says, Don, you could be our starting shortstop, what that college coach really means is, Don, you could be our starting shortstop if you work really hard, if you hit really well, if you come in really good shape, if you prove that you're better than every other shortstop we have, and if I can't recruit a better shortstop than you the next year.
Right.
That's what that college coach really means when they say, Don, you could be our starting shortstop. But unfortunately, I think you hit the nail on the head. If I say, Don, you could be the starting shortstop, you think, whoa, I've made it.
I can settle in.
I got this. So folks, there's something for you to think about, you know, getting ready for college. We want you to be ready. We want you to be prepared because we want you to be good. We want you to have fun. We want you to be successful. So Don, our coaching tip of the week, quality outfield practices. One of the things that I know for sure is that outfield is an area of the game that is crucial to our success. If we're going to have any kind of success at any level, We've got to be good in the outfield. We've got to be capable of making the plays that need to be made in the outfield. And unfortunately,
Torrey, that's the outfield. All they do is just have to catch fly balls.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's part of the That's part of the challenge. Yeah, they just stand out there, pick daisies, and every once in a while somebody hits them a ball.
They're hanging out.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think that when I watch teams practice, sometimes I think that's what people really think.
Right.
Sarcasm is not lost on me, but unfortunately, I think it's lost on some teams. A couple of things that I think we need to be thinking about when it comes time to set up our practices. The one thing that almost everybody does that I hate as much as anything about softball practices, is the whole, let's throw all the outfielders in a pile of kids out in center field and hit balls to them.
Or all they do is run the bases for infield to work their drills, right?
That too. But but so the outfield training part of it, I understand pregame when two teams are trying to share the field that that's what you have to do.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean that's what we should be doing in practice.
As practice.
The one thing that we started doing, you know, several years ago that I think was one of the best ideas I ever had, and I wish I would have had it a lot earlier in my career, was at the very beginning of practice, we would split the team into two groups. We would have our outfield group and our infield group. And again, depending upon your facility, sometimes you're going to be a little bit limited. But what we would do is, after the kids would stretch and kind of get warmed up so that they could run around and do some stuff, we would put the outfielders on the field in their positions, because there's a lot of stuff outfielders can do without throwing the ball. And a lot of what we really need to work on now at this aspect of organizing practice is the balls in the gaps, the balls over the head, seeing the ball hit to them from home plate so they can see the angles and the depth and all that stuff, and so they can actually run and cover some ground to make some plays. We would have the infielders, pitchers and catchers would go and start warming up their arms, you know, doing their throwing program. And the outfielders would go to their positions. And all they would do is they would make a play on a ball and they would toss it on the side and we'd put it in a bucket.
Sure.
So you'd have left fielder, center fielder, right fielder. In the college setting, we would have two or three kids in some positions, which really made this work out great. But so let's say you've got your first three outfielders in position. You hit a ball. Let's say you hit a ball in the left center gap. The left fielder and the center fielder both make a play on that ball. One of them catches it, runs it down, blocks it, chases it down, whatever the play is, toss that ball on the side, get back in line behind their position. And as soon as that ball stops moving, you can hit another ball to the right side of the field or back to the left side of the field.
With
the next center fielder rotating in.
Yeah.
If you've only got one kid in each spot, you can still do the same thing. You just got to wait a little bit of time for them to reorganize and get back to their positions.
But in the travel ball world, no issue with having a couple of each, because you're going to need, somebody backing up as well, right?
Yeah, and so, the challenge then is, it allows those outfielders to see tons of balls hit at them from the same angle and the same perspective that they're going to have.
We can be talking about drop steps and which side of your body's going to open.
And communication and all that stuff that we would normally do in outfield drills, but it gives us a chance to do it on the whole field. And it gives those kids a chance to really enjoy being an outfielder. Because what's the best thing about being an outfielder is making that really long run.
Great catch. Yeah.
And when there's 12 of us standing in a pile in center field and I can only run 20 feet to my right or 40 feet to my left, I never get the fun of making that play. But more importantly, I never get the experience of recognizing, well, I can run 100 feet before I'm going to run into the center fielder. And she and I can both run after that ball and make that play and communicate and make sure that we catch it without either one of us running into each other and all those kinds of things. So, to me, that whole split group idea is really important. So let's say, it takes your, the other half of your team, let's say 30 minutes to do your throwing program. So they're doing that on the side while you're working with your outfielders. Your outfielders aren't throwing the ball anywhere. They're not making a single throw to a base. So now the infield group is warmed up and ready. Your outfielders have had 20, 25, 30 minutes on the field chasing balls and seeing all the angles and depth and everything else. Now they can go and warm up their arms while you can do 30 minutes of stuff on the field with the infield. So your bunt coverages, your basic infield plays. Then the outfielders warm up. When the outfielders are warmed up, they come back out to the field. Now they can do their throws to the bases, the cutoffs, the relays, that kind of stuff. And so again, the outfielders are back out on the whole field using the whole field instead of just, in one little group out there in center field. And so I think that to me is a really good way of, in that first, hour-ish of practice, to spend a lot of time for your outfielders really getting quality practice in, spending some time with your infielders getting quality practice in, and then time with all of them, you know, together doing your team concepts, and very, very smoothly, very, very simply, one field, and those outfielders get a really good workout in that really applies to real softball.
And something I like, Tori, that you're describing right now is that that we're not wearing arms out. I mean, the original piece with the outfielders just working on getting good drop steps, getting good jumps on balls, communicating, all that stuff is without a throw from the outfield to home.
Right.
You know, back to whoever's catching up or that type of thing, so that we can be still pretty fresh for the whole team infield scenario after.
Right. Yeah. But, and I think that's a really important point and something I didn't talk about enough. And so what ends up happening is normally we would want to let our outfielders practice all that stuff, but we wait until it's with the whole team when we're working on the throws and the relays and all that stuff. The outfielders are making tons and tons of long throws in a system that really takes a lot longer to execute.
Sure.
So by doing the split group practices, we get the kids out there. They get plenty of opportunities to work on reading the ball. And especially for younger kids, that's one of the biggest challenges, right? College kids, you know, reading a routine fly ball is not that big of a challenge, but just think about those, you know, 8, 9, 10-year-olds that are just starting to get the depth perception and the ability to actually track a fly ball. For them to see that ball get hit to them from home plate is a different thing than you know, just tossing it to them in a line.
And learning how to run, keeping your eyes smooth, yep, so the ball's not bouncing in your vision. And, you know, you can talk about all that type of stuff. So,
yep. And so the split group coaches, that's what we want you to start to really consider doing, something like that. It's going to be shocking at first to your kids, because what does practice always look like? Everybody throws. Everybody warms up together. Everybody does this. Everybody does that together. And we can break that mold and start doing stuff that makes a little bit more sense.
And we got to take care of those outfielders.
Yeah.
They are special.
Yeah. And we want to make sure that they see us as valuing them.
Yep.
Okay. And again, so the idea of, you know, you as the head coach and being involved in working with them at the beginning of practice, almost like the number one priority is the outfield, getting outfield work while everybody else does their throwing program, sends a pretty clear message that you value it and that you're going to be important to you.
I want my outfielders to be excited that they're outfielders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think all these things work. So quality outfield practices, coaches, we got to work on it. We got to make sure that we're using ideas like the split group model to give them the time and space and opportunity that they need to really develop. So Don, for episode 151, I think we've had a lot of fun stuff to talk about. Let's make sure we remind everybody about our sponsors, Cleated Up FP, Next Air, and Elite Sporting Goods. Please check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/everythingfastpitch. Remember, we've got the Zoom Coaches Clinic coming up February 21st. It's free to all our patrons. It's $20 if you're interested in signing up as just a regular listener that wants to get on board with the Zoom Coaches Clinic. We've had a lot of interest. I think we're going to have a good group of coaches getting together. We're going to talk about practice organization. We're going to talk about coaching styles and reaching different players. And we're going to spend some time talking about hitting and hitting fallacies and problems in how we coach hitting. Then we're going to wrap up with some questions and answers. Zoom Coaches Clinic is free for all our patrons. You also get a 40% discount on the Square Cuts training disc and a lot of other benefits just for being a patron. So please check out patreon.com/everythingfastpitch. And as we mentioned earlier, please, nominations for player of the week, suggestions, listener questions, all of the above to everythingfastpitch@gmail.com or fastpitchprep@gmail.com. So Don, anything else for 151?
No, it's been a great week. Looking forward to next week too, Tori.
Sounds good. So for Coach Don McKinley and our producer, Stan Lewis, this is Coach Tori in the Cherokee Batting Range Podcast Studio saying thanks for listening to episode 151. Hopefully Mother Nature cooperates and we get some better weather. And we'll talk to you again next week.